The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a special trade deadline reaction episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Lots of action from the Red Sox. Not much of it significant. And myself, Terry Cushman, with you tonight. Jeremy Schilling tag teaming this episode with me. Do you feel better about our chances in the playoffs, or was this Heim Bloom 3.0?
Heim Bloom 3.0. I feel like we may have a better chance of holding leads. I don't know that we're any better, generally speaking. You know, I mean, look, my biggest frustration with it is the failure to go out and get a player that has a chance to have a large impact. We're already seeing Chisholm in New York has 4 home runs in 3 days. You know, I'm on a lesser extent. Pham goes and hits a home run tonight in St. Louis. You know, tonight was the night that Paxton pitched, and he looked good through 3 and then ran out of gas. So I don't see any of these remaining players being a nightly impact that has a chance to add wins that we may not otherwise project to have. So I'm a little bit frustrated. I'm a little bit frustrated with the organization's propaganda with regards to labeling it a success. And we're obviously going to, I'm sure, get into some of what Breslow said. You know, it's just frustrating. I know for a fact now that Cassis is on a rehab, he played tonight in Worcester, that we're going to get adding Cassis is, you know, a deadline move commentary. So that's where I'm at in a nutshell.
So the Yankees won 9 out of roughly 30 games. They trade for Jazz Chisholm, like you just alluded to. They're about to win 4 in a row. Chisholm has always been what you like to say, an electric factory. All the Yankees had to give up to get him was their 19th and 20th ranked prospects. That's it. And they get a guy who can produce at the plate. They get a guy that can steal bases. they get a guy who's a pretty good defender.
Well, let me answer your comment with a question, which is, where does he fit?
Well, I mean, he's very similar to Sadon Rafaela. He can play any outfield spot. He can play second base, and he has played shortstop on occasion. So, you know, I just... The right-hander we did get. Now, if I told you... Let's get into the Red Sox stuff real quick. We've spent a month talking about possibilities, mock trades, all of this. If I told you we were going to end up with James Paxton as our significant starter, Danny Jansen as your right-handed bat, and then Lucas Sims and Luis Garcia, which I don't hate, but... I mean, we were getting arms back anyway. You're getting Slayton back within a week or so. Same as Chris Martin. The biggest needs we had were the starting pitcher and the right-handed bat. I don't think we accomplished anything.
No, when Paxton was acquired, I think I messaged you and said, I'm okay with it if he's the second best starter we acquire at the deadline. And if your expectation by the front office is Paxton is somehow going to impact wins, you're out of your mind. He's a back end of the rotation guy. He kind of is what he is. Like, you know what you're going to get from him, 4.5, 4.7 ERA. Going to be limited innings, 5-6 innings at best. He's been in the organization. He's not unknown to us. And he kind of followed that same MO out in LA this year. So we knew what we were getting. I was okay with that body in the rotation instead of Criswell. What we needed to do is continue to push the staff down the line and get a 1-3 legitimate starter that is not only going to help in 24, but in 25. And we have this backlog of prospects. It makes no sense to me to not go trade those chips in. And I know what the organization's saying. Do it. And we're going to do it in 25. Trust us. By the way, I have no trust in you. So shut up, Sam Kennedy, and shut up, Breslow. I don't trust anything you say. What's wrong with arriving a year early, Terry? There's nothing wrong with it. It's like we're being punished because we're a year early. You're a year early, then your expectations with regards to spending your chips is a year early too. There's nothing wrong with it, you know? And so I don't know why they chose to do it this way. Breslow gets up and all this commentary is basically patting himself on the back like he did something fantastic. Meanwhile, they gave up 10 runs tonight. And I don't know. And let me say one more thing about Jansen. Where did that need come in to the mindset of the front office? The last thing I was thinking is we need to improve the catcher. We have Teal coming. McGuire, I'm not a huge fan of, but he's serviceable. I think he was a 0.1 WAR, so he's effectively neutral. And Wong is a top 10 catcher, certainly offensively. My only gripe was with Cora playing McGuire too much. So just play Wong more and my problems early. We gave up absolutely nothing for him. It just seems like such an odd move to go incrementally increase the backup catcher spot when we need a right-handed impact bat, a legitimate first 1-2-3 starter. And then I do think they at least did what they thought was best with regards to putting some better arms in the bullpen and pushing some people out. But that catcher move, it just doesn't make a lot of sense other than to say we got a right-handed at bat.
So Jansen is hitting .219 on the season. His on base is .310. So 90 points above his batting average. He can draw some walks. 6 home runs, 18 runs driven in. This isn't anything. And not only is he not an impact guy, he's a rental. You gave up three low-ranked prospects for him, but it's a push. It's a push from McGuire for the most part. Connor Wong's still going to get the majority of the at-bats. I guess Jansen could DH against lefties because Masataka Yoshida, as hot as he's been, is only hitting 167 against lefties. So he's essentially, you know, a platoon DH. I can't believe we have that on a big market team, but nonetheless, I don't think Danny Jansen addresses anything. We don't know how he's even going to work with the pitching staff. You still have a lefty heavy lineup there. We didn't address the balance issues. Nothing got addressed with the lineup. That's the same exact thing. And then with James Paxton, every time I would see him linked to the Red Sox last winter, my blood pressure would just go up. I'm like, the dude crapped out, would completely lose his command at times over the course of 2023. And then he couldn't even finish the season with us. And then not only that, he ended up having the terrible season that I thought he was going to have anyway. And we still acquired him at the deadline. He was still the move. Okay. How can Crawford are essentially redlined now? They're in uncharted waters. I don't know what they're going to have left. It could be similar to what you saw with Chris Sale in 2017 and 2018. Very good through the first 3 months, and then he just ran out of gas. Chris Sale did, and you're starting to see that probably for different reasons with Crawford and Houck. Paxton does nothing. He's not going to be the shot of adrenaline. We're going to get into his performance tomorrow night against the Mariners, but after 4 1/3, Alex Cora trusted Zach Kelly to come in with the bases loaded over a veteran guy like Paxton. Kelly got the ball, and the Mariners are the worst team in MLB versus lefties. They're only hitting 215. They're ranked 30th among MLB teams hitting lefties, and Paxton still scuffled. You know, he gave up two earned, and then only in the fourth inning, or fifth inning rather, when four runs were given up, only one of those was charged to him due to the bad defense. But still, he's not a guy we're going to trust, and he's probably not even going to finish out the season because the dude is cooked.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you're saying there. And if I had a theme for the plan going into the trade deadline, it was we are willing to trade certain prospects that we don't see having an impact on the big league club. And we have zero interest in training anyone we forecast to have a role somewhere down the line in the big league club. And what we got was probably the best we could with that plan in place. Lugo, I think, is subject to the Rule 5 draft. I also think he's an infielder where we have a bunch of surplus in the minors. I was reading that some of these moves are going to allow Meyer and I'm spacing it to move up to Worcester in a couple of weeks. Go ahead, Terry.
I was going to say Kyle Teal probably.
Yeah. And so they're both in Portland. I think the next move is you'll see them being moved up to AAA in the very near future. So they attempted to buy by only using minor leaguers that had no future in the organization. And this is what you should expect if we knew that going in.
Another trade that I can't stand is the deal we made. I think that was that on Sunday We traded our sixth-ranked prospect, Nick York, for Quinn Priester, who's been just absolutely dog shit at the major league level. Good numbers in the minors whenever they call him up. He's absolutely terrible. The guy I wanted was Yusei Kikuchi. The Astros had to give up their 9th and 15th ranked prospects. Now, let's put this into perspective here. The Astros have the 29th ranked farm in MLB. One of the worst, most depleted farms. So their 9th ranked prospect versus, you know, Nick York. I just feel like we could have moved York and got much better value. I don't know if Quinn Priester really has a future in the major leagues. I'm sure they think Andrew Bailey's going to fix him, but it's a lottery ticket. You don't know what you're going to get. And people will say, well, Nick York wasn't going to be protected in the Rule 5. Well, for as long as Bobby Dalbec is on our 40-man, I don't see why we couldn't have put Nick York on the 40-man. And quite frankly, I'd be curious to see what he could do at the major league level. I'd give him a shot at second base. I'm not worried about service time because he doesn't fit into the long-term picture here. And, you know, we saw guys like Travis Shaw come up with very low expectations, just kind of occupying a spot in the lineup. And, you know, they made somewhat of an MLB career out of it. And he's a second baseman. So why not give him a shot? Why not DFA Bobby Dalbec and give York a shot? I'd rather do that. I mean, he can't be any worse than Emmanuel Valdez, Vaughn Grissom, anybody else that's served time at second base. I would have tried out Nick York. And if anything else, I would have moved him for someone better. The Red Sox long-term future didn't improve here. It didn't improve. And
well, Priester gives you some depth now. A little bit, at least one player worth of depth. You're giving me a face, but that's the truth. We have no pitching.
I just don't know. I don't.
You can't disagree with that. Priester has had very good minor league numbers. He projects to be an effective pitcher at the major league level. He's pitching for the dumpster fire that is the Pittsburgh Pirates. You bring him into this organization, you give him some time in AAA, and he goes back to effectively being a prospect. So the thing that's curious is why not use York and, let's say, Lugo, who we use to get Luis Garcia, and go get a more valuable piece, you know? And again, we're not in the, you know, we're not on the phones. We don't know what the conversations were, who was available. You know, maybe certain teams see the Red Sox as somebody that's up and coming and they're a little bit more hesitant to deal with the Red Sox. I don't think that's the case. But, you know, I hope I'm wrong. I like Priester as a prospect. Obviously, his major league numbers are kind of concerning. But if York was never going to project to play for the Boston Red Sox and they traded him effectively for what they consider to be a high-end pitching prospect, I don't hate it. I'm going to be interested certainly to see how it plays out. But my whole thing going in was to lump prospects together and go get a more valuable piece. And I feel like the market was there to go get some of these guys and they just chose not to do it. You know, so I'm not going to say it's Heim Bloom time here. I think it's a step better, but it's certainly nowhere near the idea that let's go and give ourselves a chance in 2024.
I feel like we could have made better moves. We could have acquired guys that could have helped us longer term than the guys we did acquire. I don't think we're a playoff team. Unequivocally, right now, we're not playing baseball in October.
Agreed.
So where the Bloom comparison comes in is you probably could have got a top 10 prospect for Jansen, probably a top 10 prospect for Pivetta, who came off of a great start against the Mariners, who most likely will be a postseason team. And you could have gotten a decent prospect for Tyler O'Neill, and maybe multiple prospects for any one of those candidates. And it didn't happen. You did nothing to improve the organization long term. It was all a bunch of short term stuff to get the same exact result we got the last 2 years. That's all that happened here. And this is what aggravates me. Here's a comment by Breslow. He says, quote, "Anytime you go through a deadline with a pretty clearly defined shopping list and walk out feeling like you accomplished it, you feel good about it," Breslow said. "I think this team has shown they're more capable. We're winning, and we have our sights set pretty squarely on the playoffs and deserve some reinforcements." This is a guy who is living on another planet.
It's run by Sam Kennedy.
I've wondered that. But for right now,
Sam Kennedy whispered in his ear before he made those comments, "It's not a lie if you believe it."
Where does that line come from?
George Costanza and Seinfeld.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Breslow has very quickly and efficiently assimilated himself into the ownership propaganda. And to say that we created a shopping list and went and got all the items on that shopping list means someone's an idiot, because where on that shopping list is a power right-handed bat? Where on that shopping list is a left-handed starting pitcher with controllable years and plus stuff? Like, you're delusional. And Red Sox fans aren't buying it. They aren't buying it. Like, he is going to get shelled tomorrow on all the podcasts, on all the radio stations, on all the local TV spots. No one's going to buy it. No one that pays attention to baseball is going to buy it. So, I mean, it's like LeBron James, who surrounds himself with nobody that'll tell him he's stupid and tell him no. Like, I don't know what management in the front office is doing except for only mingling amongst themselves, because if they listen to any outside noise, if they listen to anything anyone is saying, they would not say things like that. So, I mean, see, you're trying to get me fired up. We didn't even plan to record. I'm not going to fall for the bait, but it's so frustrating.
This Craig Breslow, you know, the people that defend him, I refer to them as the Bresbians. I didn't make that up. That's been floated out there. I referred to the Bloom Huggers as the Bloominati. I didn't make that up either, but we were the ones that took it and ran with it. All of them are defending it. Like, they, tonight when I made some snide remarks about James Paxton's start, they were all over me because the defense let him down, and they expect him to be a very viable starter with our pitching program when he couldn't be with the Dodgers. When he's infinitely worse than last year. His walk rate's up. His velocity's way down. He's got a fastball and a curveball. When he gets a team that can actually hit lefties, with some strong righties in the lineup, they're just going to sit on him, and he's going to get destroyed, especially at Fenway Park. It's not going to be pretty. And these comments by Breslow, this is a guy who is in way over his head, who only got this position because a bunch of other smarter people thought, nope, I don't need to deal with the clown show that comes with this ownership group. I'm not gonna answer to all the holdovers in the front office if I can't bring my own guys. Sam Kennedy, I don't know if he's influencing decisions, but he's making Breslow's job a lot harder. And I don't know if Breslow's the guy anyway. I really don't. Like, nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense here.
The organization, just generally speaking, and it flows through Breslow, obviously, is so afraid to make a mistake that they're just trigger shy. I mean, they're so afraid to throw a prospect in and have him be successful in a different organization. And I don't know why, because if you go get an established player with a pedigree and they're producing in Boston, then who gives? I almost swore. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, let's say you trade Teal and Teal becomes a good player, but Vlad Jr. is here for the next 6 years and hits 30 home runs and 100 RBIs a year. Do you care?
No. Like,
yeah, you could say, hey, Teal's out there and he's a great catcher and he's a 20-80 guy and he's durable and he controls the pitching staff. Yeah, but Vlad has established his Hall of Fame career here in Boston and we won a championship. You know, everything since Dombrowski left screams, don't make a mistake. And so the only way to not make a mistake is to not put yourself out there. And this is another trade deadline where they didn't go out on a limb and take a risk.
If they would have just gotten, you know, a Zach Eflin type guy, you know, Garrett Crochet would have cost a lot. So would Tarek Skubal. That's why they ultimately didn't get dealt. But you could have got some serviceable arms to reinforce that rotation. And you could have splurged for a right-handed at-bat. And like you said, a guy like Vladimir Jr., you know what you're getting. You know what you're getting. And not only does he have off the charts numbers at Fenway Park, but he's durable. He plays every game. And I think a guy like Vlad hitting either in front of or behind Devers, that's as close as you get. That's as close as you get to Manny and Poppy. And I would say it would end up being pretty damn close. You look at Devers' numbers, his batting average just went over 300 tonight. His on base is 380. He's on pace for at least 40 home runs. What are we afraid of?
Making a mistake.
There is no mistake. I'd give up any one of the big three for Vladimir. And then I probably would have thrown Nick York in that package, to be honest. And
well, obviously, because the organization didn't value him. And guess what? It's okay to overspend if you love a player. Go overspend. No, like if you overspend, no one 6 years from now, if a player has continued to play at a high level and been an important reason why the Red Sox move forward, no one's going to complain and say we overspent. No one cares. All they want to see is results on the field. Now, the only thing I'll say to that is there does have to be some balance. You can't just empty the clip on the minor leagues and leave nothing there. But it wouldn't have taken that. It just wouldn't have. There wasn't a scenario where we were going to, you know, trade 1 through 8 in our prospects and just leave it empty. I mean, you just, especially if you could find a way, and I'm sure Cassis has value and could have easily been part of that deal.
You know what? You could have done that, and you almost would have had to have done it because there's just no place to put him, you know, and I would do a 1-for-1 deal with Cassis. For a guy like Vlad, if it's a first baseman that's a perennial all-star, then yes, I would put Tristan Casas in that deal. But I don't feel any better about it, and it's been so long since we've been good. You know, yeah, we went pretty deep in the playoffs in 2021, but it was a miserable winter. None of us thought we'd get there. We kind of overachieved in the first half of the season, nearly pissed it away. We had to sweep the Washington Nationals 3-0 in the final series of the year. And even though they're a bad team, it's hard to win 3 games in a row against anyone, really. And we went deep, but the expectations were low. We never felt good about the team really at any point. And I think we're setting ourselves up for another winter of frustration. Red Sox fans are always waiting for it. We're always waiting for it. And we're always hoping that the move that just happened will make sense, you know, as the other moves that follow continue to happen. And it never makes sense. And it never comes. We're always waiting for it. And we've seen 4 championship teams by 3 executives. We know how these teams are built. And for the Red Sox front office to give us this trash and then be arrogant about it, it's frustrating. This winter, nobody's going to get qualifying offers. That's what happens as soon as the playoff ends. Nobody's Pivetta, O'Neill, Jansen, none of them are getting qualifying offers. They're not going to take a chance by giving them a 1-year, $21 million deal in the event they actually say, yes, I'll do it. So that's not going to happen. And then you're going to go through November. The GM meetings take place that month. Historically, nothing major usually happens. You're going to see some of the mid rotation pitchers sign, you know, the Eduardo Rodriguez, you know, Chris Bassett type guys may get signed, but the Red Sox aren't going to act. The winter meetings will probably be hyped up. Those will come and go. The Red Sox probably won't do anything. And probably by late December, we'll get whatever our key move is. Last year, it was Lucas Giolito and then the Sale Grissom trade. Those were the moves. The year before that, we got Michael Wacha. Or actually, was that 2022? No, excuse me. The year before that was Kluber in late December. The year before that was Michael Wacha. It's going to be the same old winter. And then Corbin Burns is probably going to be sitting out there for a while. And we're going to hype ourselves up hoping we might sign Corbin Burns. But guess what? We're not going to be the ones to sign him. It's going to be the same winter with the same executive that doesn't know how to do his job, that doesn't have the balls to do his job, even if he did know how. The incompetence, the dumbass quotes, it's going to be miserable.
I agree with everything you just said.
it's the same bad movie.
I know the adage is that you have to pay more when there's no pressure on, you know, early in the offseason, early in the season, if you have to address a need. So the idea is to wait to the last minute when teams will take less. If you identify a player that you feel immediately impacts the big league club, go get him. Stop bleeping around and go get the guys you value. Because we're going to be in an infinite spin zone here where we're taking the guys that are left that are lesser players, and it's going to continue in perpetuity. And I'll just go back to my previous comment, and you said I think the same thing a little bit differently. They're gun shy. They don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to give up a prospect and have the player come in and not be successful, because they're built, you know, they want to be built on depth, and they want to have a constant eye towards the future. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. I'm so jealous of teams like the Dodgers and the Phillies, because their ownership's all in, their front office is all in, the rosters are stacked, and they're giving the team every chance to go win a World Series. And, you know, unfortunately, we're going to be watching those teams into October, because the Red Sox are set up here to fail because the schedule is brutal coming up. We're already in the middle of it because Seattle's a fringe playoff team. Like you mentioned, multiple starting pitchers are already exceeding their high innings mark. And I don't care that you added a couple of arms. The rest of the bullpen is still just beaten to hell. And guys we thought provided depth, like Weissert, for example, don't. They have been terrible for a month or longer. And today was an absolute bleep show. You know, I mean, there was, you know, and I know you questioned Kelly coming in for Paxton and all that, but if Kelly comes in, gets those outs and the game remains 4-3, then, you know, they scored 6 runs. I mean, the offense gave you a chance to win the game. I mean, and it's like that seemingly every night. So the bullpen's blown to hell. We get 2 new arms. We'll see how they are. We can't, you know, let's not start off on the wrong foot. Let's be optimistic with that. But I mean, the pitching staff doesn't get addressed and they're all over their innings mark.
The Red Sox, I was listening to the Nesson feed because I don't think I can get a different feed when I'm watching it on my phone. I was out on my nightly walk for most of the game, but I heard O'Brien say that the Red Sox have given up 6 or more earned runs in the last 6 games in a row. So, yeah, we added to the bullpen, but how often are we going to be giving them a lead at this point? It's maddening. And I wonder, I guess Breslow will probably get one more season, but I mean, how long will it take before the Red Sox ownership, before Sam Kennedy admits they were wrong about Breslow being the right guy for the job? Like how long
Terry,
is...
Terry, are you out of your mind? Out of your mind?
Hang on.
Hold on.
Not publicly admit they're wrong.
They're competitive. Breslow has them on the upswing. They're competitive. They bought. And he did it with giving up the 17th overall prospect in Lugo. So as far as they're concerned, we're continuing to project upwards. Their year that was marked down as the year we were going to ascend is 2025. Assuming they stay in the hunt for any, you know, towards September. I mean, they're commentary probably through the offseason as Breslow put us in a position to be successful this year, and he's going to continue to improve the club, and he's the guy.
No, well, I was saying that with, you know, with the idea we're not making the postseason. So at the end of the year, when they reflect on what they, you know, didn't get right, and I mean, this is going to blow up. I mean, let's pull the schedule up. I think we have the Rangers next.
Kansas City's in there.
Yeah, Kansas City's right after them. Then you've got the Astros. I think the Rangers again. Maybe even the Astros twice. It seems like...
No, the schedule's brutal. But here's the thing, Terry. We get to the end of the year, and they miss the playoffs by like 3-5 games. You know what they're going to say. This was a building year towards 2025, which is when we wanted to compete anyways. The fact that we were in it, you know, and I don't think we're going to be in it for very much longer, to be very candid. But let's say they stay in the hunt. Let's say they stay within 5 games till the end. That's going to be spun as a positive.
I don't believe it is, because one of the only Breslow guys that actually exceeded expectations was Tyler O'Neill. I mean, these were all guys that, and Hamilton's cooled off. I mean, it was a nice run for him. Yoshida's sort of on the upswing, but he's been historically a streaky guy. So we'll see if he can sustain it. But Here's the schedule. You got the Texas Rangers, who didn't really sell anybody. They still have all their pitchers. They're going to get DeGrom back. I think Scherzer's back, last I checked. You got Rangers, Royals, Astros, Rangers again, Orioles in a four-game set, by the way. Astros again. Then you got the Diamondbacks, who've actually been playing pretty decent baseball lately. And then at the very end of the month, you kind of get a breather by facing the Blue Jays at home and then the Tigers at Comerica. Let's just move on to September here. You got the Mets, then you got the White Sox. That's an easy series. Orioles, Yankees, Tampa, Twins, Blue Jays, Tampa again. And Tampa's going to be getting some pitchers back as well. So even though they sold off some guys, Paredes, Rosarena, they're still going to be a pain in the ass. I don't know if we'll be under 500 for the year, but we're going to be under 500 for these 2 months.
I think we'll end up under 500 for the year.
I think so too. And I don't think Breslow's the guy. But we're stuck with him. Here's one thing. Now that Alex Cora has his extension, he can take some liberties now. I'm sure he's not going to be throwing people under the bus publicly, but behind the scenes, he has to voice his frustrations. So I'm almost regretting. I didn't like the idea of Alex Cora going into the front office. I really didn't, but I think it would have been better than what we have now. I really do. And if the managerial search were up to him, I think he'd get a smart guy in there that could, you know, do the job.
Well, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I got nothing left to say. I'm just frustrated. I'm just as pessimistic as I'm more pessimistic because foolishly I thought we might do something. Yet this was my doomsday moment here when Justin Turner got traded to the Mariners for their 29th ranked prospect. That was my uh-oh. This is really it. We're not going to do anything spectacular. And that was it. And I tweeted out on Twitter. I said, take every single mock trade you've seen on Twitter in the last couple of months, throw it in the trash because you're not getting the player. It's not happening. Because they weren't on,
you were right.
They weren't on Breslow's shopping list. That was Danny Jansen and James Paxton and Quinn Priester. You would have been better off trading for an actual priest. I think the Red Sox need a priest right now, just way more than they need Quinn Priester. But I got nothing left.
Yeah, sell the team, John Henry. Please, all right. Begging you.
So we'll be back tomorrow night with our normal rotation of shows. And we'll see how this series ends. I forget who even the matchup is. I know we're facing George Kirby. I don't know who we have going, but it doesn't matter. So Red Sox, 6 games above 500. They can go to 7 or they'll be at 5 if they lose it. So we'll be back to cover it. Thanks for joining us. I'd like to say I feel better now after getting this stuff off my chest, but I would be lying. Take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.